Chris Denny is a musician from West Palm Beach, Florida. He was hooked on music ever since he was 6 years old when he watched his uncle play drums at the local church. When he got a bit older, his grandparents surprised him with his first drum set, which he would play for hours on end. Over the years, Chris taught himself how to play the drums out of sheer passion and developed a reputation around his school as a talented musician. But while Chris undoubtedly enjoyed playing music, he didn't initially see it as something he wanted to do professionally. His actual career goals eventually led him to the Air Force, where he worked as an aircraft structural engineer. But even while in the military, Chris couldn't escape his love for playing music, and he continued to play drums in his spare time. By the time he completed his service in the military and began attending college, Chris realized that he did now want to become a professional musician. He reconnected with friends to form a new band, and the band actually started to take off. They were playing large gigs and getting paid, and they even landed a lucrative record deal. But while things were starting to look up for Chris in his career as a musician, a bad business deal went down with a contract that would leave Chris feeling betrayed by someone closest to him. Devastated, Chris quit the band and gave up on his dream of being a musician. He ended up moving to South Korea to do some self-discovery, and what he ended up discovering was that while he moved across the world to escape playing music, it wouldn't take long for his passion to come roaring back. I'm Bobby Gonzalez, and this is Spoken Dreams.
My name's Chris Denny. I'm originally from West Palm Beach, Florida. I guess you could say my main job would be drumming, since I've been doing that for the past 20 years. But I've also done producing, songwriting, and a little bit of engineering. I guess you could say it was when I was around 6 years old, I saw my uncle playing the drums at a church. And I just remember sitting next to him and watching him play and just like really feeling like the impact that the drums were making. Most importantly, like the kick drum, I mean, you could like feel that thing just like pumping through your chest. It was wild. And I was hooked from the beginning right then and there. I've always been passionate about singing as well. I used to like to sit down in front of the cassette player and I would just copy songs, you know, note to note, and just sing them, memorize the words. And I would just singing in the car when my mom and I would go down to the keys. And yeah, that's basically where I got the start from, was just a childhood passion. So the first time, I guess, that I really started, you know, playing drums myself, you know, I was a big fan of this band called Smashing Pumpkins, which I still am a big, huge fan of them, always will be. And yeah, I used to just sit in my bedroom floor listening to their CDs, and I would literally just start banging on the floor with my hands. You know, I think my grandparents had kind of caught on that, hey, maybe he likes drums. So they got me a practice pad and some sticks, and I started just tapping along on the floor with my practice pad and my sticks. And then maybe about 6 months later, they surprised me with a drum set. Never asked for it. I actually wanted to play guitar, and they bought me a drum set. And at that time, I had moved from Florida to Texas. So we had a farm, and we had like a little barn house that half of it was a rec room. And so I could put my drums up there, and I literally could play all day and all night, you know, till the roosters were crowing. And that's basically what I did for the beginning couple of years of drumming. All I would do was just go up into that garage, and I would play 3 to 4 hours a day, copying CDs from, like, you know, Nirvana, Smashing Pumpkins, Ozzy Osbourne, Aerosmith, like all these bands. And I basically just taught myself by copying CDs. Yeah, that was really the beginning of me drumming. By the time I got into sixth grade, I had already like really formed, you know, a pretty big passion for the drums. So that was when I was old enough to kind of join into the school orchestra band. Unfortunately, because I was going to a really small school out in the middle of nowhere in Texas, the band only had enough room for two drummers, and two kids had already signed up for it. So I was a little bit late. So I chose the trumpet, actually. And it was a good thing, because by playing the trumpet, that enabled me to learn how to sight read music, and I learned music theory. Fortunately, to my advantage, the music teacher left and this new teacher came in, and I kind of took that as an opportunity to try to reinsert myself into the drumming line. And you know, she asked me, has anybody taught you? And I said, no. And she's like, well, can you play this? And I just got up there and played. And she's like, all right, you know what you're doing, I guess. So she never gave me any instructions. She literally just like handed me sheet music and just let me do whatever I wanted to do. And then I formed a little band with this, my buddy Derek. And we used to like set up our stuff in the school gym and just like rock out, you know, and we kind of built a little reputation of being like those rock kids, you know, in the school. Up until that point, I was a little bit of a loner, I guess you could say, and I wasn't really fitting in, except for like when I played on sports teams. But once this happened, I guess the perception of me kind of changed in the school. And yeah, when I had the attention all of a sudden, it was like, oh, Chris does something cool. And I felt cool for the first time ever. And the feeling I got of other people liking what I was doing with the music and everything like that, it really gave me like a sense of worth and being. And I kind of really discovered, you know, who I was and who I really wanted to be at that time. After ninth grade, I moved back to Florida because I wanted to live in a bigger city. I wanted to live by the beach, and that's where my mom was, you know, so I moved back there. I got out to Florida, and then I kind of got introduced to more of a punk rock style, NoFX and bands like that. And so I formed another band in high school with this band. Our first real serious band was called Lefty's Boner. It's a great name, right? We were like a Blink-182 high school band. You know, our songs were jokes. You know, we wrote about like rabid M&Ms or something like that. I can't remember fully, but we had a good time, you know. And actually, around that time, I started getting a little bit of the bug of I was wanting to do more. That's when I made my first album. And it was just a 5-track EP we recorded in some friend's bedroom, you know. And when I made that first album, I was like, wow, this is really cool. Maybe I could do something with this later on, but I still was a little bit more focused on becoming some other kind of professional. And long story short, I ended up going to the Air Force. So I joined the Air Force, and I was an aircraft structural engineer on KC-135 refueling jets, like in Tampa, Florida. And I still really miss playing music. So my sergeant at the time actually let me have like my own private room to put my drums in. And yet again, I started another little hobby band with somebody. And this guy, his name is Jose, he introduced me to this college in Orlando called Full Sail, because we were both getting out of the military at the same time and he was going to go to Full Sail. And I was like, dude, let's go to Full Sail together, because now I did want to start making a career in music. And funny thing is that he didn't go to Full Sail and I did. I went to Orlando, started going to Full Sail, reconnected with my buddy from high school that I was in the Lefty's Boner band with, and we made a band called Oh Romeo. And yeah, it took off, actually. That's when the whole like real like band thing hit, because we're booking gigs, we're getting paid, we're making merchandise, doing, you know, little homemade videos. It felt like, yeah, we're really trying to do something with this. Played quite a few big shows at that time, and this was when we finally got our first little record deal with this record company called Takeover Records. And the owner of Takeover Records was Benjamin Harper, who was the original guitar player from Yellow Card. And they kind of supported our second album. And I started doing some session work with some other bands, played on the Vans Warped Tour a few times. Things were going great. Unfortunately, this is when things went down, which tends to happen sometimes, you know, but it was really hard for me because it was the first time that it went down. And it was also a life lesson, because I learned that you need to pay attention to contracts. And even though you might be working with your best friend, sometimes you need to watch out for your best friend. There was a bad deal that went down with the contract, and it was almost like my best friend was, for lack of better terms, screwing us all. And it got to the point where I quit. I quit the band. I was really devastated, and I kind of had the notion of, you know what, I don't want to do music now. Because I had this huge dream of like becoming big with my friends, and touring with my friends, and living a great life with my friends. And then when this all happened, and I saw that that wasn't gonna happen, I almost like lost my passion, because I wasn't gonna do it anymore with my friends. And I was like, well, I don't even know if I wanna do music anymore. So I quit the band, I finished university, didn't really know what to do with myself at the time. And this was like around 2009 when the financial crisis was hitting. So there wasn't really any jobs. So I actually took a lifeguarding job at Walt Disney World. But, you know, I was a little depressed at that time. But I actually reluctantly forced myself to start playing with another band because I was like, you know what, just at least keep up your chops just for fun. So I joined this band called Wheels Above. And even though I joined it just for fun, it actually ended up that these three guys became like my best friends. You know, we connected on levels that I didn't connect with the other guys. And it kind of brought me back to my original music roots, which was like alternative rock, not so much heavy metal anymore. And so I kind of started getting more into music that I really wanted to do and making friendships again. And then at this time, a friend of mine that went to Full Sail with me, she randomly showed up at this music festival that we were playing at. And I was like, Angela, where have you been? I haven't seen you in like 2 or 3 years. And she told me that she had been living in Japan. So I did a what the hell kind of thing. Like, what do you mean you've been living in Japan? Well, I'm teaching English in Japan. Well, how did you do that? You went to Full Sail. You're not a teacher. And she's like, oh, you know, as long as you have a degree, you can go teach English over there in Southeast Asia. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. And, you know, she sent me some information and I sat on it for about 2 months. And finally, I was like, you know what? I'm going to do this. I'm just going to do something and just travel. Because before that time, my main focus was only the band for like 6 years. That's all I did was the band. Didn't travel, didn't do anything. I was fed up with music at that time. I didn't really want to be the rock star anymore. And I did want to have kind of like a self-discovery moment. So I did it. I got my certificate, took an English teaching job in South Korea, and that began my 7-year life in South Korea. Probably like the coolest moment I had on that first morning when I woke up was that I woke up so hungry, not really knowing what I was going to do for food, you know, because I'm jet lagged. I walk out into like this like misty morning and I spot the most beautiful thing I had seen, the Dunkin' Donuts. I saw it. I was like, thank God, there's Dunkin' Donuts. So I walk over to Dunkin' Donuts and I'm just standing there looking at the menu because it's in English and Korean, right? So I'm looking at it and I know exactly what I want. I want the bacon, egg, and cheese bagel. But I didn't know what to tell the lady, you know, because that, again, I didn't speak Korean. So I'm just sitting there looking at the menu for like 5 minutes, trying to figure out what I'm going to say to her. And finally, she just says, do you know what you want? Like in English. And I was like, I was scared. I was like, what? Oh, you speak English? And she spoke like fluent English. And I was like, oh, thank God. And I told her what I just told you. I've been waiting there for 5 minutes. And she was so kind that she's like, you know what? It's your first day here ever in Korea. Like, I'm just going to give you the breakfast for free. And she bought me breakfast. It literally was from that moment on that I had nothing but great experiences in Korea. You know what I mean? It just felt like everything was right, like I was supposed to be there. Lo and behold, 2 months later, after being there for a little while, I walked into this bar, and it's a live karaoke bar where you get up and sing with a band. And so my one friend was like, dude, I'm going to play Weezer, Say It Ain't So. I was like, oh, awesome. Can I get on the drums with you? And they're like, you play drums? Because I didn't tell anybody I was a musician. I didn't want to, you know. I was like, yeah, I can play, you know, a little bit. I got up there and, you know, obviously I played the song, you know. And they're like, wow, I didn't know you played. Well, the owner came up to me of the bar and he's like, hey, you know, you're pretty good. Why don't you come here on the weekends and start playing with us when we have parties and stuff like that? So I was like, all right, cool. The owner was this guy named Tommy. The guitar player was his nephew, who was about the same age as me, you know, mid-20s. And from that day on, I spent the next year almost the majority of the week with that family. And they brought me into their family and, you know, they were cooking me food and teaching me about Korean culture and like all this stuff. And bam, the music passion came like back. I love it again, you know, because of the camaraderie that I was feeling with these people. And I didn't even, still wasn't speaking Korean that much, and they didn't speak English that well either, but we didn't have to because we had music. One day I got a phone call from my mom and she had told me that, hey, you know, your grandfather's in the hospital. He's been diagnosed with like stage four cancer throughout his whole body. And the doctor just gave him a week to live or something like that, which obviously means that he knew he had cancer for years and just didn't want to do anything about it because he was is old school. You know what I mean? He's like, I'm going to die when I die. You know, again, I was raised by a single mother and he really raised me like I was his own son. So he was like my father. So I instantly hopped on a plane from Korea right to Dallas because he was in Texas. Went straight from the airport to the hospital room and I stayed in that room for 3 days straight, never left other than to get food, obviously. And then I fell asleep next to his bed. And then around 4 o'clock in the morning, I happened to just randomly wake up for no reason and literally watched him take his last breath. Just breathe in, out. It was done. It was like a like air had left the room. It was a really feeling I had never felt before. And from that moment on, after I watched, you know, this man who was like the all powerful person to me growing up, watched him pass away, I really kind of took a hard look at my life. And from that moment on, I decided that I was only going to do whatever I can to be successful in what I love. And not only in his honor, but also for my own self and for my own life to be happy with what I'm doing. So Chunan is a fairly small city by Korean standards. I mean, it still is 1 million people, but compared to Seoul, which houses half of the country's population, you know, 1 million people is pretty small. So the way I kind of was getting into the industry in Chunan at first was I formed a band called Colin Phil's with a couple of other foreigners that were there. And we started playing around the whole country. We played literally everywhere. Within a couple of months, we just went for it. And then one day, we play at this show in Cheongju and there's this band opening up for us and their name was Walking After You. It's an all-girl Korean rock band and I kind of caught the attention of like the one guitar player. We dated for a little while and everything like that, and from there you know, I started going up to Seoul more often and she started introducing me to everybody up in Seoul. And she introduced me to this guy named Scott, who is a guitar player in the band YB, which is like Korea's biggest rock band, still is the biggest rock band now. And yeah, this from then on, I mean, I started just meeting people, having beers with people. I decided to move to Seoul. One thing just led to another. And, you know, I played in numerous bands throughout that time as well, but the big thing finally hit when this band named Post Panic approached me, and they are on a record label called Soundholic. And next thing you know, I got signed to a Korean record label with a band that was, you know, pretty well known. I think the main thing I was thinking at this time was that life really has a way of kind of like guiding you if you kind of just listen to it and go with your instincts. You can't see it right now, but I have a tattoo on my arm. In Korean, it's "멋진 음악 즐거운 인생," which means for a good life, you need good music. And the reason why I got this tattoo is because there was this guy there. His name is Kim Song-bae. He's a contrabass jazz musician, phenomenal player. Jammed a couple times with him, and this was like his motto. And again, I'm still like having this like euphoric dream about like, wow, how does all this happening? How is like me from Florida in Korea with these people and this is all happening now? And then I'm meeting you and this logo of yours like means everything that I've been looking for in my life. So I tattooed it on me because I always wanted to remember, you know, what I've always known but never wanted to admit was that all I ever wanted to do with my life was play music and to never forget about that. Because I came to realize that when I'm not playing music, I'm not being who I am, and my life, regardless of what happens to it, is not as happy as I am when music is in my life. So besides being in the band that I was in South Korea, you know, I got to do some really awesome things. I was a drummer for the K-pop artist Kim Jong-hyun, which unfortunately he just recently passed away. But that was like the hugest music video shoot I have ever got to be part of. You know, he's a major artist. Like that YouTube video that we made, it's like, I don't know, it's got like 10 million views or something like that. He was in this band called Shiny. So yeah, so when I got to do that, I was like, man, this is as high as I've gotten. You know what I mean? Like, this is like, you know, I've reached a little bit of a mountaintop. And I started thinking about, well, where can I go from here in Korea? Where else can I go from here? Like, what's going to be my maximum level of success that I can reach in Korea? And I kind of came to the realization that this was about as high as I could get in Korea. So I started realizing that maybe my aspirations are going to be a little bit bigger than what was available to me in Seoul. So I started getting the notion of, hey, maybe I want to give it a try back home, back in the States. And I had always wanted to live in California. So I just started coming out here and checking it out. First time I ever came to LA was over the summer. I did meet some old friends from college here, and I did like the area. Met a girl. So love kind of brought me back as well. So yeah, so here I am. My main goal right now is to finish my first solo album. I use the name Abzy, which is spelled like A-B-X-Y. I'm working on one more song, and then I'm going to start doing the mixing. And so I want to get that out there just so people know this is what I can do. I'm not just a drummer. I'm also, you know, a songwriter, composer, engineer, a little bit of everything. I'm also looking to get back into drumming with the band here. And then also another kind of passion of mine, I would really like to start doing some composing for film or possibly games. My ultimate goal, like my own personal goal, is that I want to win a Grammy. That's like a really big goal of mine. Not only for myself, but because I also look at that as like a representation of like the sacrifices that my family had made for me and the encouragement that they gave me throughout my life to just keep going and keep doing what you want to do. Especially my grandfather, you know, that would really just be like my way of like showing like, you know, everything you taught me in life and all the encouragement and sacrifices you gave to me have like come to this point now. And, you know, and I never gave up. I kept working. For the best advice I could give to someone that's going through whatever they're going through right now with whatever career that they're going after, is that if you're not doing it for the love and the passion of what you're doing, then you shouldn't be doing it. No amount of money or success will really keep you happy throughout your life unless you're doing what you love. Because no matter what business or what industry you work in, there's going to be struggles, there's going to be disappointments, there's going to be success too. But the success is not going to mean as much if it isn't something that you truly want in your life. So I would say that the best advice I could give is to always just follow what you love and what your passion is, and just never give up.
That was Chris Denny. If you want to check out Chris's music, you can find links on our website, ktla.com/spokendreams. Don't forget you can also follow along on Facebook, and we're on Twitter and Instagram at Spoken Dreams Pod. If you've got a story to share or just want to say hi, you can reach me at our email, spokendreams@ktla.com. If you haven't already, I encourage you to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Podbean, Stitcher, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Episodes are always free, and subscribers always get them first. While you're at it, don't forget to check out KTLA's other podcast, Frank Buckley Interviews. Latest guests on that show include saxophonist Kenny G and comedian Gabriel Iglesias. That's it for this episode. Spoken Dreams will be back with a brand new episode next week. So until then, break a leg. Spoken Dreams is produced by me, Bobby Gonzalez, for the KTLA 5 News in Los Angeles. Executive producers are Olson Ebright and Jason Ball. And I'd love to hear from you. Tell me what you thought of this week's story, or even tell me your own story. You can shoot me an email at spokendreams@ktla.com.